This is podcast number 156 for the Well-Educated Mother's Heart. Hi, I'm Marlene Peterson, and today's topic is the birth of a new nation and staying free. Today marks the 230th anniversary of the voting in of George Washington as the first president in the birth of our new nation. It had been a risky, long, and difficult labor. America didn't suddenly come into being July 4th, 1776. That just marked the impending and hopeful birth announcement. It would be another 11 years and lots of bloodshed before these immortal words were presented to the world. We, the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, and secure the blessing of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, do ordain and establish this Constitution to the United States of America. In our day, when we see single laws 2,500 pages long, it is a miracle that this document that secured our liberty and that's held us together for over 200 years was written on just 4 pages of parchment. I went and saw it in person last year, and I teased a little that they had moved it, that I saw it hanging by threads from the ceiling. Of course, that wasn't true. But hanging by a thread is how it sometimes appears to be, as ignorance is tearing us apart and dividing us as a people, where the provisions of the Constitution are seen as mere suggestions, and there's a call out there that it's time for something new. How little such voices seem to know of the price paid, and the miracle that this government of, by, and for the people is. So today I want to share a few of the resources you can draw from to teach your children about the Constitution and the gift of freedom they enjoy. Last year, I recorded an 1879 book called The Story of Liberty by Charles Coffin that was included in the podcast. You can still access it there if you start with podcast number 37 in the February 2018 archives, although I'm in the process of giving it a new home, and I'll post that in the Facebook group when that's ready. One of the best ways to help your children appreciate freedom is for them to see what life looks like without it. And this book offers a vivid impression, although I don't recommend it for younger children. There's a lot of sad and disturbing things, like martyrs being burned at the stake, for instance. But for you, it will give you quite an education on the events leading up to the settling of America pertaining to the story of liberty. I highly recommend it. It's one of those life-changing books, at least it was for me. I also link to the digitized copy in Internet Archive in the Libraries of Hope Library. In Volume 6 of the Freedom Series, The Stories of the Government, I included a book that explains the working of our government and some of the landmarks in Washington, D.C., as seen through the eyes of 4 young children on tour with their very knowledgeable uncle. True, a lot of things have changed since then, and I tried to make note of them, but it will help them to see things as they were first intended. For instance, it was a rule that any new bill introduced to Congress had to be read aloud in its entirety 3 times before a vote was taken. I'll leave you to consider how adhering to that one rule could affect what's happening in Congress today. Also in that volume is a look at our Constitution written for young people, where the Constitution is explained line by line. And then the middle book in that volume gives a brief overview of the events that led up to the formation of our new nation. I also want to call attention to another book by Ava March Tappan called The Story of Our Constitution that was written in 1922. You'll find a link to that book in the middle school section of the New Nation section in the library. A friend of mine recorded it last year, and I'll try and get that recording posted for you as well. When you look at the strong opinions and the divisions and the difficulty of getting anything accomplished in our government today, realize it was no different when these men came together to write our new Constitution. Human nature never changes, and even then there was a hard-headedness and hard-heartedness, tempers, jealousies, stubbornness, divisions, and necessary compromises that had to be made. Those involved saw that it was a miracle that it came together at all, and it almost didn't. This book gives you a glimpse at the kinds of problems that were facing them, including the issue of slavery and the 3/5 clause. Let me share a few of the selections from the book, starting with the preface that said, "It is a thrilling story, the tale of 4 million people deliberately choosing a form of government for themselves and promising to live in obedience to its laws." There was once a family of boys who were somewhat inclined to quarrel. One day the father called them together and handed the youngest a bundle of short sticks. "See if you can break it," he said. The boy tried, but he could not even crack them. Then the next boy tried, and the next, and finally the oldest of the four, but the bundle was tied closely together and remained as firm as ever. While the boys stood wondering what their father was trying to do, he untied the string and gave each boy a stick. Even the youngest could break one, and the father said, "You boys are like the sticks. If you quarrel and each one stands alone, you are weak. But if you are good friends and stand together, no one can ever harm you." It is a pity that the Americans could not have read this old fable every morning of the first years following the Revolutionary War. They had had a severe struggle and they had won the victory. Naturally, they were somewhat puffed up and just a bit proud of themselves. No one should step on their toes, whether he were George III or a man from a neighboring state. They had opinions of their own, and every man was prodigiously sure that his were correct. It was some scary times between the end of the last battle of the Revolution and the sitting down and the writing of the Constitution, which are outlined in this book that you can read about. And poor Washington, who had already given up so much for his country, was called back into service. Let me read a little from that chapter. Washington had hesitated about accepting his appointment as delegate. He did not wish to be swept back into the tide of public affairs. His life since the close of the war had been as fully occupied as it was during the struggle. He had taken leave of his officers with great affection, and with tears in their eyes they had silently watched him while he entered the barge that was to carry him to Paulus Hook, New Jersey, on his way to Mount Vernon. For his services as commander-in-chief of the army, he had refused any compensation, but had agreed to keep an account of his expenses. This account he now presented to the comptroller of the treasury in Philadelphia. In Annapolis, where Congress was then in session, he formally laid down his sword. "I here offer my commission," he said, "and take my leave of all the employments of public life." So it was that he returned to beautiful Mount Vernon, which he had not seen for 8 years. But the peace and quiet for which he had longed, he could not find even there. Guests came in a constant stream. Everybody wrote to him. Some sent him inquiries which, as he said, would require the pen of a historian to satisfy. People applied for favors of all sorts. One requested the loan of his private papers to assist in writing a history of the events of the war. One asked him to write to Europe for a wolfhound. Another wished permission to dedicate an arithmetic to him. The Empress of Russia begged him to collect for her the vocabularies of some of the Indian tribes, and he did. Little Mademoiselle Lafayette, 8 years old, wrote him a letter, which received a prompt reply. Those who could think of nothing else to write about sent him pages of compliments. Everybody who had ever wielded a paintbrush wanted him to sit for his portrait. And all this while he was longing to give his time to his family and his estate. That his place should have some attention was very necessary. During his long absence, he had received weekly reports from his overseer, but for 8 years, Mount Vernon had missed its master's hand, and it was sadly in need of care. This was the private business which demanded his presence. His finances were troubling him. For 2 years, his crops had failed. He could not collect debts that were long overdue. His living expenses were much increased by the numerous visitors. He wrote his mother that he had no idea where he could get a shilling toward the taxes that were due. He would not be in debt, and he feared lest he should have to sell part of his estate. His country was not ungrateful, but when he learned that through Congress the whole nation was to be invited to unite in a gift to him, he gratefully declined it in advance. He would take no rewards for serving his own land. Even when the companies formed to connect the Virginia rivers with the Ohio wished to present him with shares worth many thousands of dollars, he refused to accept the gift because he believed that he could arouse the interest of the people in the undertaking more surely if they knew that he had no selfish concern in it. Surely no one could have blamed Washington if he had left public business to others and had spent a little time in attending to his own affairs. When he left the army, he said that he hoped to pass the remainder of his life in a state of undisturbed repose, and he felt sure that becoming a delegate would be the beginning of a return to public life. But duty to his country came first with him, and when Shays' Rebellion showed so plainly the lawlessness of the land, he laid aside all thoughts of his own advantage and accepted the appointment. Washington never accepted any position without preparing himself as thoroughly as possible to fill it well. Now that he had agreed to be president of the convention, he set to work to make his presence of value. He read the standard books on politics, and he read also the history of a number of the modern and ancient confederacies. He pondered over these. He made outlines of what he read, and he noted in each case its good points and its bad ones, and why it was a success or a failure. The convention was to meet on Monday, the 14th of May, 1787. 5 days earlier, Washington set out for Mount Vernon in his carriage. How indebted we are to him for his selfless service. He truly deserves the title Father of our country. Finally, when I was serving on the executive board for Homemakers for America, now called Moms for America, I wrote a little booklet that contained the vision I had of what we need to do as mothers to correct the course going forward, because I do see a threat to our freedom. I had recently completed the Freedom Series, and as I pondered all that I had learned, a simple formula emerged, a sort of a three-legged stool that is required for a people to remain free. The three pillars that I see of liberty are faith, virtue, and patriotism. Remove any one of them and it topples. We're in danger of knocking out all three. In later years, I could see in this formula the same pattern for learning that I share in the well-educated heart. In our faith is our love of God, who gives us a vision and a desire for liberty. Where the Spirit of the Lord is, there is liberty. It requires faith to see the hand of God in the stories of the nations, and especially in the story of America. Virtue is simply abiding the laws of God, universal laws upon which happiness is based and upon which people can live together harmoniously. Laws such as temperance, frugality, industry, chastity, honesty, courage, loyalty, gratitude, patience, reverence. And patriotism is not intended as merely the waving of flags and decorating with red, white, and blue, but patriotism in its active sense of organizing and doing the work required of a free people, of serving and voting and being involved, not out of mere duty, but out of a love for our country and its ideals. When patriotism dies, the soul of our nation dies. These three pillars are best taught in the home, and mothers, as you know, I believe, have the most influence over the hearts of their children. I linked a free copy of this little book I wrote on the landing page for A New Nation. If you're concerned about the direction we are heading in our country, you, the mothers in your homes, are the ones who can change it. Your children can become tomorrow's leaders. Everything we do here at the Well-Educated Heart is all part of this work. As Calvin Coolidge wrote, and which I put on the back of the book, we read, "We do not need more material development. We need more spiritual development. We do not need more intellectual power. We need more moral power. We do not need more knowledge. We need more character. We do not need more government. We need more culture. We do not need more law, we need more religion. We do not need more of the things that are seen, we need more of the things that are unseen. It is on that side of life that it is desirable to put the emphasis at this present time. If that side is strengthened, the other side will take care of itself. It is that side which is the foundation of all else. If the foundation be firm, the superstructure will stand. One last personal experience you may have heard me tell elsewhere. As I was putting together this little booklet, this message to mothers several years ago, in a way it seemed too simplistic to me. I was a little hesitant to put it out there, and I said a little prayer. Is this really the answer? As I opened my eyes, I noticed a page that had been opened on my desk for a few days, but I was just working over it. I wasn't really paying attention to it. Somewhere along the way, I evidently had highlighted a book called The Story of Rocks or something like that by David Starr Jordan, who I later learned was the first president of Stanford University. And a strong impression came to me to look for that book, which I did. I couldn't find the book about rocks, but I found another book written by Jordan called The Care and Culture of Men, and I felt to open and read it. I soon came to a chapter called The Nation's Need of Men, and my heart burned as I read these words. If the experiment of government by the people is to be successful, it is you and such as you who must make it so. The future of the republic must lie in the hands of the men and women of culture and intelligence, of self-control and of self-resource, capable of taking care of themselves and of helping others. If it falls not into such hands, the republic will have no future. Wisdom and strength must go to the making of a nation. There is no virtue in democracy as such. Nothing in Americanism is such that will save us. If we are a nation of weaklings and fools, with an aristocracy of knaves as our masters. The remedy for oppression, then, is to bring in better men, men who cannot be oppressed. This is the remedy our fathers sought. We shall find no others. The problem of life is not to make life easier, but to make men stronger, so that no problem shall be beyond their solution. If representative government is ever to bring forward wisdom and patriotism, it will be because wisdom and patriotism exist and demand representation. I'm going to link this book also in the notes of the podcast. He had so many good things to say. Leaning on the opinion of someone who was much smarter and wiser than I am gave me the courage to move forward with the message at a time when the only voice out there was that the solution to our problems was found in elections and in the policies that are being set. Another example of the world's tending to external forces, whereas God always works inside out. Today, my confidence in this solution stands independent. I know that building stronger men and women is the answer to our problems, and you, the mothers, are the primary builders. I hope these resources that I've shared with you today will help you in your job and your calling to be able to secure our liberty not only today, but for generations to come. Bye-bye. See you next time.